This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. In a little less than a month, Hiroshima, Japan reaches a sad milestone. On August 6, 1945, the United States dropped one of only two atomic bombs ever used in an act of aggression. It leveled the city. It killed about 80,000 people outright. Estimates range from 80 to 150,000 overall in terms of the radiation that followed the attack. When Ellen O'Hara Slavik decided to go to Hiroshima in 2008, she knew she wanted to do a project that captured the city and how it's been affected by the bombing that took place almost 68 years ago. The result is her new book, After Hiroshima. Ellen O'Hara Slavik is a professor of visual art theory and practice at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Her images are now at our website, stateofthings.org, and you can take a look as we talk about the pictures in this book. Ellen, welcome back to the program. Good to
Thanks
have you.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about this book and how the idea came to you.
Well, the book is the sort of culmination of a project I started in 2008. My husband, David Richardson, is an epidemiologist. He studies the effects of radiation on nuclear workers. And he was going to Hiroshima to study the A-bomb data, which is the data that's used all around the world to determine laws and exposure rates about how radiation affects people. So he wanted to go and study that data set. The Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission built this space in Hiroshima in 1947, right after the war. So him bringing us there for the summer of 2008, he suggested that I put A-bombed artifacts on X-ray film to see if the lingering radiation in those objects exposed the X-ray film. So I knew I was going to do that, and I knew I wanted to do rubbings of A-bomb surfaces to try to speak to the enormity of what was lost in the A-bomb. Yet, as you said, 80,000 people died instantly, and it was 100 to 140 by the end of that first year. People continue to die every year as a result of radiation illnesses still. But the whole city was annihilated. It wasn't just people. You know, there were only 60 trees that survived the A-bomb, and thousands perished, and people were incinerated in seconds, and their shadows were left on the steps. So I knew I wanted to do rubbings of the places that survived as sort of to evoke the things that vanished, but also because I wanted to do the rubbings and then I'd bring them back into the darkroom and I do prints through the rubbings as if they're negative. So they have this X-ray negative look, just like the autoradiograph, the X-ray film would look. But then when I got there, I had the idea of the cyanotypes, which are sun prints, blue and white prints. I also did thousands of pictures, documentary pictures that are not in the book, because I think Japanese photographers have done a remarkable, amazing job, and my photographs are, it just didn't seem as important.
How much of the sense of, in the enormity of that attack, it remains in that city 60-some years later?
Well, you know, the city is a self-designated city of peace. Nagasaki is not that. I didn't go to Nagasaki, but the A-bomb is, I say this in the book, it's everywhere in Hiroshima. There's monuments and memorials and historical plaques. The center of the city is the Hiroshima Peace Park, which houses the Peace Museum, which is where I had access to the A-bomb artifacts. They have 90,000 artifacts in their archive. So everywhere you go, and every of those 60 trees is marked by what kind of tree it was, how far it was from the blast. And so you can see the trees that survived, or if a building remained, and there's not many of those, there's a big historical plaque in front of it. So in parts of schools that remained, and marks in the wall where people were leaving notes to try to find their family members or left, you know, they're covered with plexiglass on the walls of the old schools. So it's not everywhere, but it's you know, all the sidewalks are designed for blind people because the incidence of cataracts were so enormous after the A-bomb. Every elevator has Braille. You know, it's very present.
Tell us about, let's talk about some of the photos in this book. Talk about the first one now, X-ray, lingering radiation. Mm-hmm. Tell us what's happening there.
So this was one of the X-rays I did. I took a piece of X-ray film. I put it in a light tight black bag, which you get when you buy photo paper. And I placed a fragment of an A-bombed tree trunk on that X-ray film for 10 days in a totally dark room in the Peace Museum. Everybody that I worked with and helped me were amazing in Japan. And I left it there for 10 days. And then I put it back. I took the object out and I brought the X-ray film to be processed. This is the only autograph that's in the book. And the reason is it's the only one that had real registration. All the others have a few specs. But this one actually looks like radiation exposure. And the famous French physicist Henri Becquerel did a test in the 1800s where he discovered that uranium emits radioactivity, and he did it through putting uranium salts on photo paper, and it kind of looks like that, like those marks. So that one was the most disturbing, because that means these objects still have radiation in them, and people are handling these objects. So I didn't want any registration. You know, it's a hard project.
Yeah, and as you say, it's if you had done this on any other object, a tree limb, this shouldn't have happened.
Right.
And it does have. And I think the remarkable thing about it is that you put it in context. This is not something that you can look at in the abstract, hang on a wall without any kind of marking or frame like this book, and have it mean what it does when you look at it.
Right. So, it's pretty abstract, yes.
But it has to be put in context, and it's an important context. Interestingly enough, the text in this book also in Japanese and English.
Yes, which was very important to me, that it be in Japanese and English. I want the book to be as much for the Japanese people as anybody, if not most of all. But yes.
Are there a lot of Americans who go to Hiroshima?
There are. You know, Hiroshima actually is, you know, a tourist city because of the A-bomb. And, right. You know, I did meet Americans there quite frequently. Most of them are peace activists like me, you know, and they were against the dropping of the bomb. But there are, I don't know of too many American artists who've gone and really done artwork there or any sort of prolonged project. And I had many tour guides and translators and interpreters and museum people tell me very often that you're the only American who's wanted to go to this island where they sent the contaminated horses to be cremated, and they built an orphanage for A-bomb children. And, you know, I heard that a lot. So...
Well, let's talk about it. Another one. This one is called, this is a bridge.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
So that bridge it's about 25 feet by 6 feet tall, and it's a pedestrian bridge that survived in the Shikoin Garden. The Shikoin Garden is sort of like Hiroshima's Central Park. It's the main park. Many people were told to go there in case of a severe bombing. So they went. They all died before receiving medical care. Their ashes are interred in the garden. Everything there was destroyed except for a little bit of a bamboo grove, which is now a second-generation A-bombed bamboo grove, and this beautiful pedestrian bridge called the Kokokyo Bridge. And I went with a friend, Dina Brown, who was working at the ABCC or RERF, the facility where my husband was working. And she helped me put these huge sheets of paper up on the pedestrian bridge and rub them. And then printed them. And what I love about it is I ran out of paper before I couldn't do the whole bridge. But I love that the image isn't a full bridge, because it conjures up the fact that things have potential or things are lost, or there's an energy to it. I think that if it was the full bridge, it would feel too static.
And how did you choose the items in the book?
Well, there's lots of ones I didn't choose. There's a lot more work that is not in the book. But for many reasons, significant places for sure, but also images that are the most powerful visually. The bridge was critical for me to have in because it's the biggest one, and it you can imagine yourself walking on that bridge, especially when you stand in front of it in a gallery, because it's so large that you have this corporal relationship to it, bodily.
Tell us about this next one. This is Atomic Mask.
Atomic Mask. That is the first one that I washed. So you expose these, you put the objects on sunprint paper, and then you rinse them in water. You expose them for 10 minutes, then you rinse them in water. And when that one appeared, it was the first one I did. I cried because I could not believe how this big piece of steel metal, you know, from a beam from this A-bomb dome, which they left as a monument to what happened, and it's at the center of the city, ended up appearing looking like a mask that you could hold. It's a three-dimensional object, and part of it recorded as sort of like a handle below the face with two eyes. And I just couldn't believe it looked like a paper bag mask that you could put on, or a rectangular flat mask you could hold in front of your face, and those empty eyes.
And it's a steel beam.
And it's a steel beam.
Yeah.
And it's bright white. So everything translates completely differently. You know, everything that's black translates as white, and anything that's empty is this dark cyanotype blue. So it's a pretty transformative medium.
What's it like for you as an artist to go there? You had deep feelings about the bomb and about the fact that the Americans are behind this only nuclear attack, atomic attack in the history of the world. So you have strong feelings going in. Mm-hmm. Does anything change for you when you get there and actually start working with this material?
Everything just gets way more intense. I mean, you know, we went with our children, and I would drop them off at the International YMCA every morning for the day, and I would go and work. And I mean, I'm not saying this to be cliche, but I would cry pretty much every day at some point. It was a very intense thing. I mean, the first day I went into the Peace Museum and you watch these documentary films, you know, a girl's trying to fan the ashes of her father to cool him, you know, after he's been cremated. And you see the keloids and the scars and the injuries and people. It's, you know, it was all I could do that first day was watch that film. And then I would go back for a little bit more. But yeah, I grew up going to the Hiroshima Day memorials every summer on August 6th with my parents, who probably organized them. You know, they're big activists. So Hiroshima was in my consciousness all along. And then my first book, Bomb After Bomb, is a series of drawings. The United States is bombed in Hiroshima, of course, is in that book. And the essay in that book by Carol Mavor really focuses on Hiroshima. So Hiroshima has been in my life and consciousness in a really big way. So to go there felt like, in a way, an honor and an opportunity. But also I knew it was going to be very emotional, and it was. And I mean, for me, the most way it's changed is that I feel, well, the Japanese people have made me feel this way, that it's really important that an American go there and respond to what we did in a longer way or in a bigger project. And there are lots of other Americans who are there working for peace and against nuclear proliferation. But in terms of art communicates in a different way. And so, I mean, I don't want to say it's a gift at all, but it somehow feels that way, or like an act of diplomacy. It's way too dramatic or too strong a way to put it, but it feels that way on my own personal level.
And what about that famous quote that you include in this book and you deal with, the quote that poetry after Auschwitz is barbarism? Can mm-hmm. you say, can an artist say anything after the horror?
Well, I always use that quote by Adorno, and also W.G. Sebald says, you know, you can't, he says the same thing, but they both were writing after Auschwitz. So they both were still creating. And of course, silence isn't the answer. I mean, I love that saying, silence is complicit, which was, you know, huge in the ACT UP movement. But I think you have to remember and speak out. But I think you have to be responsible and careful, and you have to try to cause no harm and act as ethically as you can in dealing with something as problematic and historical and, in my opinion, criminal as the dropping of an A-bomb on civilians.
What were some of the ethical restraints that you felt, and were there moments that you thought, no, I can't do this, I can't publish this?
Yeah, I definitely did not photograph any of the Habaksha. The Habaksha are the A-bomb survivors. If you translate it literally, it translates as explosion-covered people, but it is always translated as A-bomb survivors. I did not photograph the ones that I went to hear speak, or I just didn't feel comfortable with that. I also felt like I did photograph some people, but I didn't want to photograph people without getting permission or having them understand the role in the project. And I also didn't want to show the horror, the gory, real, horrible trauma and injury on the ground. I mean, you can't anyways. It's already been represented. You know, there's tons of documentary footage and images. Not that most Americans have seen them. You know, the Smithsonian right. canceled the show they were going to have that. But it seemed important for me to try to create my own visual language to represent it in a new way, because I think it's important. People think Hiroshima is about the past. It was 68 years ago. But there's 30,000 nuclear weapons on our planet right now. So it's still about today.
Well, and it's about the willingness to use terrorism. This was about
yes.
making Japan stop going to any length to force them to stop. And, of course, on the threshold of the Cold War, a message had to be sent to the Soviet Union and its potential clients that we were willing to use the bomb. All of that is now part of the public record, which the public didn't have access to when Truman made the decision and announced it. Now we know that mm-hmm. this was, in fact, a terrorist act. We held a civilian population hostage and agreed to annihilate them in order to advance a diplomatic imperative.
Well, you say we know that, but I can't tell you how many Americans I meet who say we should have dropped more atomic bombs. I mean, I gave a lecture on this at the North Carolina Museum of Art, and I almost had to stop because a man kept saying we should have dropped more atomic bombs. It would have saved a million more American lives. So I don't think everybody knows that, and most people don't know that Japan was ready to surrender anyway. There was no need to drop the bomb on Hiroshima, and then certainly not on Nagasaki. So yes, I agree with you. It was a terrorist act. It was criminal.
Yeah. And that Truman had more accurate figures about the number of Americans, but
yes.
He chose to go with a higher,
yes.
higher estimate. He had far better estimates. Yeah. Let me get you to talk about one more mm-hmm. before we close. And again, these pictures, images are on our website, stateofthings.org. Tell us about this one.
That one is called Exploded Bottle, and it is actually a brown bottle when you look at it, but it translates again as white. But whatever was inside it, whatever liquid contents, which they think was probably beer, was so hot and heated up that it forced its way out of the side of the bottle. It's not out of the top, it's out of the side. So it almost looks like it was shot from inside, like a bullet came ripping through from the inside. It's pretty incredible. Often the bottles are melted beyond recognition. They're just blocked.
I think that's what's remarkable about the image. There is this kind of blowout on the side of the bottle. The bottle, it was hot enough to boil and explode the contents and not melt the bottle.
Yeah.
So the weird effects
yes.
that we still can't get our
it
heads
is.
Around. Ellen, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
Ellen O'Hara Slavik is a professor of visual art and theory in the practice at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. You can go to our website, stateofthings.org, to see some of the images that we talked about from her book, After Hiroshima. And thank you for listening to The State of Things. Stateofthings.org is our website. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.